2023 has been busy with unexpected events from the regional banking crisis to the debt ceiling. I think it's time we check back in on our black swans, see who's still lurking around. Here's what matters. Live from New York City, I'm Lauren Goodwin, and this is Market Matters from New York Life Investments. In this podcast, we bring you the best insights from across the New York Life Investments platform because we believe that by sharing perspectives and engaging with you, our listeners, we can all become better investors. Welcome back, everyone. It's the week of May 29th, 2023. And for those of our listeners in the U.S., we wish you a happy Memorial Day, especially for those who serve or have served in the armed forces. Memorial Day marks the beginning of the summer season, which pushed us to reflect on the year that's been so far. Debt ceiling concerns are still ongoing in the U.S., and frankly, it's been a pretty busy year for unexpected risks in general. We figured it's as good a time as any to provide an update on our Black Swan risk events from the beginning of the year. Here to give us that report card is our very own Macro Mike. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me. As a reminder, Black Swan events are those high-impact, highly unpredictable occurrences that become much clearer in hindsight. Interestingly, while we didn't anticipate the regional banking crisis and the collapse of three major banks, it's a perfect example of how black swan events can emerge unexpectedly.
Mike, when we were looking at our list from the beginning of the year, there are three key risks we want to highlight from that list. First, a food shortage that could potentially force U.S. rationing. Second, the end of yield curve control in Japan, which could bring chaos to Japanese pensions. And finally, the possibility of rivals making power moves against King Dollar. Mike, which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with food shortage forces U.S. rationing.
All right, sounds good. And as a reminder to our listeners in this risk, again, not at all a base case, but a very low likelihood event that we're watching. We saw the potential for a global food crisis to emerge out of the war between Russia and Ukraine. In this hypothetical situation, we argued that a global food crisis could lead the U.S. government to issue food rations due to dwindling supplies. Mike, jump in here, add some more context.
Gladly. So last July, the UN and Turkey brokered the Black Sea Grain Initiative between Ukraine and Russia in response to the global food crisis exacerbated by Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. The deal allows Ukraine to export grain and other foods to poor, high-risk countries. Both Russia and Ukraine are major grain and fertilizer exporters, so this invasion has had a major impact on food supplies. Since then, the initiative has been extended three times, with this latest 60-day extension signed on May 17th.
That's right. And while negotiations for a longer-term agreement, which would put this risk to bed, are still underway, the extension that came on May 17th, that was really good news because the success of these negotiations wasn't guaranteed. Mike and I were actually watching these pretty closely. In the talks, Moscow expressed concerns over access to SWIFT, a financial messaging system, which the UN has no control over. And the details regarding any concessions made to finalize the extension are, frankly, still pretty unclear.
But this deal does have a tangible impact in the market. Following the announcement of the latest extension, both wheat and corn futures saw price declines of about 3.5%. It's clear that Russia's cooperation in this initiative is crucial, so a change in strategy on that side could cause a major disruption in the grain supply, potentially leading to a global food crisis.
I think it's a valid concern. If a global food crisis were to occur, it could lead to significant shifts in consumer behavior and investment priorities. If you think about the global 19 pandemic, that brought structural changes in all of our habits. A food crisis then would probably look pretty similar. If you think about affordable dining out, that might become a luxury for only the ultra wealthy, or maybe even shopping for food itself could take on a whole new meaning. So in a scenario like that, we think investor focus would likely shift towards the near-term security of food and other resources rather than long-term financial futures. And so real assets like agriculture and farmland-focused assets, including real estate, could see a surge in demand.
Let's discuss the black swan risk in Japan next. That yield curve control ends, bringing chaos to Japanese pensions.
I like talking about this risk because the key triggering event, which is Japan letting go of its yield curve control policy, that's actually looking increasingly likely to occur this summer. Why, might you ask? Well, to start, since we last discussed the topic, there's been a notable change at the Bank of Japan. Governor Kuroda's term ended in April, something that we signposted in the piece. And Ueda Kazuo, the former BOJ board member and respected economist, has taken over.
Ueda's appointment is unique in that he doesn't come from the conventional backgrounds of Japan's Ministry of Finance or the existing central bank board itself. He brings an academic perspective to the role, which is not uncommon internationally, with examples like Ben Bernanke and Janet Yellen at the Federal Reserve, as well as Mario Draghi, formerly at the European Central Bank.
It's important to note that the Bank of Japan has struggled for years to achieve its price stability target of 2%. And that 2% target was surpassed finally in April 2022 for the first time in a very long time. But it was mainly due to the rising prices of imported goods like energy. And so many, including folks at the Bank of Japan, have wondered if it was a sustainable price increase, if that really meant that inflation was more stable.
Many analysts who closely follow the Bank of Japan expect a tightening of policy, possibly as soon as next month, due to signs of deteriorating financial market functioning. Any tightening measures or even the end of yield curve control could lead to a spike in Japanese yields. We've seen in the past that unexpected rate jumps can create crisis, like the situation with pension funds in the UK and mismanagement of balance sheets by regional banks in the United States.
Exactly. And I do want to again say that even if the Bank of Japan lets go of its yield curve control policy, that doesn't necessarily mean that we would see a crisis. And that's, in fact, it's not our base case. But we know that years of loose monetary policy may have concealed hidden risks that could potentially cause significant disruptions if there's a change in monetary policy. And so we use this Black Swan's report and these risks to identify where those bumps in the night might occur. And it's worth noting that Japanese equities have performed quite well this year, driven by market reforms, increased buybacks, and other changes that have taken place in Japan.
However, if yield curve control is ended and rate volatility increases, it could put this investor confidence to the test and potentially lead to a crisis.
Speaking of tests, the next black swan risk we need to cover here is the possibility of U.S. rivals such as China or Saudi Arabia taking significant actions to reduce the world's reliance on the dollar. We've talked about this a lot over the last several months here on the podcast. So there's lots of different ways that this could look. It could involve China depegging the Hong Kong dollar from the U.S. dollar or Saudi Arabia pricing oil in non-U.S. dollar terms. And again, while we've discussed this long-term trend of de-dollarization, we haven't witnessed any major moves against the dollar this year.
That's true. But interestingly, right after we published our Swan Lake report in January, the media started reviving this de-dollarization narrative. We were receiving concerned calls and requests for information about this so-called collapsing dollar. I actually thought we caused the media crisis. In truth, though, the narrative resurfaced after the Saudi finance minister announced the possibility of invoicing oil exports in non-dollar currencies.
That's right. I remember that. And it's a great example of a signpost, something that if you're tracking geopolitical risks as an investor, you can use to identify, oh, hey, we thought a lot about this risk. Does this fall into this framework? Does it mean that this risk is occurring? And so we had to address those concerns ourselves and frankly, debunk the narrative with a separate sort of line of communication, separate podcast. But today we'll talk about who's actually making moves against the dollar. And that's the United States itself. Take that in. It's actually the United States itself. Our research has revealed that the U.S.'s heavy reliance on financial sanctions has raised concerns about the implications of those sanctions for the dollar's use globally. The diminishing impact of financial sanctions has prompted targeted countries to develop alternative financial networks and find ways to mitigate the consequences.
And this trend has also motivated even non-targeted countries to take precautions to avoid potential exclusion from the global financial system. Nobody wants to lose access to dollar liquidity in the future, but the risks associated with relying heavily on the US dollar have pushed some countries to encourage payments in other currencies and reduce their dollar reserves.
Yeah, that's right. It's a significant shift that I think we need to keep an eye on. The U.S. has a history of throwing its economic weight around, but this can come at a cost. The rise of competitors to systems like SWIFT could further accelerate de-dollarization and could potentially weaken the influence that the U.S. holds within the global financial community. That That brings us to our portfolio pause, a segment of the program where we share an investment idea. And since we shared a bit on our black swans, I think it's worth reminding our listeners that risks like this, which we view as particularly unlikely, or risks like the ongoing US debt ceiling debacle, which are frankly unthinkable, these types of risks are very difficult for investors to position around.
That's right. With so many geopolitical or unanticipated risks, it's important for investors to stay focused on action, not distraction. What investors can consider is not whether black swans could be a force for market change, but whether that force is relevant to their portfolio decisions today.
That's right. And I've mentioned signposts throughout the conversation today. It's a really important and helpful strategy for managing potential black swan risks. We spend some time as a team thinking each year about, again, what are the risks that could completely upend the way we're thinking about the economy and investments? And those signposts are a way to monitor whether those destabilizing risks are actually happening. And again, a great way to do that is to keep yourself informed, and that's what we're here for. Coming up next, we've talked a little bit today about how unanticipated or global shifts or risks are not always something that investors should focus on. But there is one area where we think that global shifts are happening and may actually drive an investable outcome. Everyone's talking about deglobalization, and with good reason. But we have what I think is a unique take on this issue with some tangible takeaways for investors. So we'll be back next week with the whole team to introduce our new mega trends research discussing the theme of re-globalization. See what I did there? Deglobalization, re-globalization. That's it for today. We'll be back next week for more Market Matters. In the meantime, please remember to give us a like, follow, or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you have a question or topic of interest, reach out to us on LinkedIn. You can also follow our views at newyorklifeinvestments.com and by clicking the Insights tab. Until then, I'm Lauren Goodwin. See you next time. Our podcast is produced by Milo Benamatz, and our music was composed by the fabulous Zach Young. I will now read our disclosures from compliance. Past performance is no guarantee of future results, which may vary. All investments are subject to market risk and will fluctuate in value. This material represents an assessment of the market environment at a specific date, is subject to change, and is not intended to be a forecast of future events or a guarantee of future results. This information should not be relied upon by the reader as research or investment advice regarding the funds or any issuer or security in particular. The strategies discussed are strictly for illustrative and educational purposes and are not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or adopt any investment strategy. There's no guarantee that any strategies discussed will be effective. This material contains general information only and does not take into account an individual's financial circumstances. This information should not be relied upon as a primary basis for an investment decision. Rather, an assessment should be made as to whether the information is appropriate in individual circumstances, and consideration should be given to talking to a financial advisor before making an investment decision. New York Life Investments is both a service mark and the common trade name of certain investment advisors affiliated with New York Life Insurance Company. Securities are distributed by NyLife Distributors, LLC, 30 Hudson Street, Jersey City, New Jersey, 07302, a wholly owned subsidiary of New York Life Insurance Company. NyLife Distributors, LLC is a member of FINRA SIPC.